long time in the making, but it's finally here.
UCMTheB.
This is Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with UCM Provost Dr. Bridgman, and we talk about his job as provost, his history with political science, and his overall outlook on education at UCM. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Voices of UCM. I'm your host, Andrew Zoner, and today I'm sitting down with our provost and head of academic affairs, Dr. Bridgman. How are you doing today, Dr. Bridgman?
I'm just fine. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thanksgiving was nice. We were talking about that a little bit before the show. Had to get some stuff done, but other than that, it was all good.
It's a nice break, but a break to catch up for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially with a bunch of stuff at the end of the semester, I imagine. I imagine you probably have a bunch of stuff also.
It's crunch time for everyone. Trying to pack everything here at the end.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll have commencement in less than 2 weeks.
Stuff's coming up real quick here.
It is.
So let's go ahead and start out. Can you define kind of what a provost does, kind of what that means? Because when, I remember when I first heard the term, I was like, what does that mean? And I had to look it up, and I was like, oh, it's this. So if you don't mind, you could define that a bit.
In the higher ed context, it typically means the chief academic officer. Depending on the university structure and how it's set up, you can think of it as a chief operating officer as well. And also in the corporate analogy, it would be like a number two, a second in command. But I serve on the president's council, and in that I serve with other vice presidents.
Okay.
And we're all equal. But part of the provost's duties would include bringing vice presidents together around topics of meaningful importance across the entire university.
Okay.
So in that sense, we all work together. I also work closely with my vice provosts and the deans of the colleges. And anything that touches student learning, the class, the lab, the studio, would fall under academic affairs.
Okay. So kind of just that overall academic side of it as compared to like some other positions on the council and stuff.
That's correct. The primary purpose is the focus on academics and most of the academic support offices. Student experience and engagement will also have many of those offices.
Okay.
But they primarily lead the learning that takes place outside the classroom.
Okay. Is that do you also govern over like the success advising, or is that a separate?
That's within academic affairs.
Oh, okay.
Within the vice provost for academic programs and services.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Tim Crowley leads that. He's the vice provost. The other vice provost is Laurel Hogue.
Okay.
Who leads online and learning and engagement.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I think it's interesting how there is, because you typically think of president, vice president, and then everyone underneath, but it sounds like that's not really the relationship necessarily. It's more so president, vice presidents. And I think that's a different way of leading a university or a bigger organization like that. I think that's really neat.
Yeah, it's all equals. We're pitching in while we have an organization chart. It's a matter of responsibility rather than authority.
Okay.
But there is a team approach to the work and the leading the university.
Okay.
So in that sense, there is not that traditional hierarchy. We think of it that way, but in terms of how we function, it very much is a team of equals.
Right. In practice, it's more of a team-based thing, yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So kind of defining what a provost is, what do you do exactly, if that makes sense? Like, we've kind of defined, like, what it is, but what do you do actively at, like, when you're working, I guess?
Okay. Well, a typical day will include many meetings.
I'm sure.
I have approximately, let's say, 10 direct reports.
Okay.
I'll meet with each of them monthly.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll also meet with the executive committee of the Faculty Senate, the Academic Council, which are your chair executive committee.
Right.
But then also on a monthly basis, meet with the full Senate and the full Academic Council.
Okay. Then.
I'll meet with the Dean's Council monthly, which is the deans, includes the dean of what we formerly called libraries, but our university librarian,
right.
our dean of graduate studies, mm-hmm. Tim Crowley, again, in that area, and then the deans of the colleges.
Okay.
Then there's the provost council, which would include representation to include the leader of the assistant vice provost for admissions, the leader of admissions, mm-hmm. Which financial aid reports to, also right. our university farms.
Okay.
And then there's also a representative of the faculty senate on the provost council.
Okay.
So all of those constituencies I'll meet with in a given month. And then I also meet with my colleagues. I'll meet with the president on a monthly basis, but also my vice president colleagues.
Okay.
That's internally. Mm-hmm. Then there's the external.
There's the external constituencies. Part of it, and I imagine that's a whole.
That's
another
an additional set of meetings.
Yeah.
But we're primarily reviewing data. We're looking at our plans. We're looking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing we do on a daily basis is solve problems, make things help make things work better and easier, hopefully, instead of making work harder to make it easier, and to also make sure the students and the student experience is being well served.
Okay. I appreciate that because, like, I was looking at the provost section on the website, and I'm like, I'm not completely sure what exactly they do other than like defining curriculum. So I'm glad you were able to define that. I think that's gonna make a lot more sense in my head at least.
So think of it as a Grand Central Station where all constituencies kind of cross.
Mm-hmm.
We have our faculty, we have our staff, we also have the students, we have the alumni, but we have upper administration, and then we also have the external constituencies. Think parents, citizens, taxpayers, elected officials, potential donors, funding organizations, and all of their wishes and wants really arrive at the provost's office. So what we do is work on how do we develop our programs and our services and position ourselves so that we can meet all of those hopes and wishes and the goals. We, of course, set them institutionally, but as you can imagine, everybody else has their own individual goals and where they're trying to get to. And they kind of expect us to be there for them. And that becomes the work of academic leadership, is determining how best to meet all of those needs.
Yeah, so defining, like, because, I mean, everyone, like you said, everyone has those different goals, so I imagine that's a bit of a challenge trying to balance all those. How do you end up getting through that?
Well, luckily, I have a lot of help.
I
have wonderful colleagues. As you can imagine, being on a college campus, there's a lot of talent here. Among the faculty and staff, but also our students. You all arrive with tremendous talent and insights. And ideas, and so the way we balance all that is largely by those meetings I mentioned.
Okay.
A lot of talking, a lot of deliberation. I saw a headline recently that change happens quickly, but deliberation happens carefully and slowly. So we want to make sure we're having the right conversations. A term students may or may not know is shared governance. Where we collectively participate in leading the university. And that's the approach I take, and that's what helps me balance all of those demands.
We'll be right back with more Voices of UCM, brought to you by Rise Community Services.
That's the sound of a door slamming in your face. That's the sound heard by many individuals living with a disability. But it doesn't have to be. Rise Community Services is committed to opening doors, not closing them. We believe that each person deserves a life that is full of hope and empowered by self-choice. If you or a loved one need help, please visit watchusrise.org.
With an emoji. Know someone who's being bullied online? Send the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more about the witness emoji at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voices of UCM, brought to you by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with UCM Provost Dr. Bridgman. We continued our discussion by talking about how Dr. Bridgman determines what is best for the university and his past in political science.
So, kind of getting the student input as well as the faculty and staff is kind of combining a synthesis of all those ideas to figure out what is best for the university.
Yeah, the student voice is very important. Mm-hmm. And we have ways in which we ask you questions, surveys. The faculty are asking you questions in class.
All the time, yeah.
When I bump into you, you know, I will ask how things are going. And mm-hmm. And then there are folks that reach out when they encounter difficulty. Mm-hmm. But, no, that student voice is equally important as the faculty and staff mm-hmm. and understanding what is happening at the university. And then don't forget, you know, our alumni.
Yeah.
And their perspective, as well as the community mm-hmm. members who may not be alumni, mm-hmm. but who have their own leadership responsibilities,
right.
and they want to be partners with the university in leading mm-hmm. the community forward. So, yeah, we're reaching out and getting a lot of perspective.
Right. I think that's definitely very important for something like figuring out curriculum and how. I'm trying to think of the words there.
Oh, sure. No
but stuff like that, how about? It's definitely important to get different perspectives on it. And
yeah, one way that happens is for each program we have learning outcomes that mm-hmm. we hope to achieve. We hope the students are able to master before they graduate.
Right.
But we also, for example, have external advisory boards, industry leaders, who mm-hmm. share with us their experiences in hiring recent graduates, but also mm-hmm. in working with our alumni, but just also working in the field.
In general,
and
yeah.
then they share with us, here's what I think the graduates need to know. Mm-hmm. Students coming from UCM should be able to do. Mm-hmm. And we look at the curriculum to see where that may or may not be taught and where mm-hmm. it can be incorporated. We make those adjustments. But we're always looking at how well we're doing at the program level mm-hmm. to make sure our students are able to graduate with the skills and the values they need to be successful.
Yeah. I think that's another valuable part that we reach out to these industry heads, industry leads, kind of getting the exact skills because especially for something like digital media.
Right.
It's ever evolving, and you kind of see that with every industry. It's always evolving with technology or different techniques. So it's important to stay on top of that.
And the technology, it creates so many more opportunities
for sure.
than when I was graduating mm-hmm. from high school and thinking about moving into college and what I might major mm-hmm. in. I think it's an exciting time, particularly in the media.
Yeah, for
with
sure.
With technology.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And then like how you were mentioning earlier, just so much talent on campus from, like you said, incoming students, because everyone's coming from a different background, everyone has different experiences, and that provides different perspectives, different viewpoints, different talents for every individual person. And I think that ultimately gives us a better service at for our curriculum and for just teaching in general.
Absolutely. You know, our students arrive, some of them arrive having patents. Mm-hmm. Some of them have already published as authors.
Yeah.
They're award winners. And so the idea of collaborating with students mm-hmm. is one that may be somewhat new, mm-hmm. But is very important because
right.
you all do arrive ready mm-hmm. To make contributions. And in many regards, you already are. We have mm-hmm. social media influencers among our students.
Yeah.
I can't tell you who all of them are, but
we
know indeed that they are on campus. So mm-hmm. our students are incredibly talented. And it's really exciting to see where you all want to go and what you want to do and mm-hmm. for us to be a part of it.
Yeah, because inherently they're going to be connected in that way.
Yes. No, it's exciting. Mm-hmm. Students bring a lot of energy.
Yeah, I'm sure. I try to bring a ton of energy to to this, to Voices of UCM, and to my other show, Central News, as well. I try to put a lot of passion into it because it's something, not only is it something that will help me later on, it might help me get a job or something, but also because it's something I enjoy, and I think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. Universities fundamentally are places of ideas, but we're also fundamentally about developing potential and connecting, you know, our students with the resources they need to pursue their hopes and dreams.
Right.
And as an institution in society, we are the best ladder to social mobility and achieving one's full potential. So I know students also arrive with a good bit of doubt about where they fit in and what they want to do. But I caution to take time to reflect and think. Get connected with others.
Right.
Find out what their hopes and dreams are, because being on this campus is extremely important to their future, and I think the absolute best place for them to begin pursuing their dreams.
Right, yeah. And I think a lot of that doubt and uncertainty kind of comes from that place of, well, I don't know if I can directly afford college, because college is, at the end of the day, it's very expensive. So I think imagine a lot of that comes from that, but like you said, being able to connect with maybe some like current students or like alumni or something like that, you know, like your family, is a good way to kind of put those doubts to rest. And also just doing just understanding where am I going, what exactly do I want to do. And I think that's something that maybe needs to be more emphasized like out of high school, because I remember as I was getting out, they were like, oh yeah, everyone's going to college. And I think that perception honestly hurts a lot of people because they go into college not really knowing what they want to do. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if that perception changes and then how it might change.
Sure. And it's okay to not know.
For sure.
There's a motto I like to use that at UCM. We are affordable and I can show you how. The biggest expense of going to college is operating that second household.
Right.
You know, most folks are living with someone else, but then you have to go and establish a way to pay housing costs, meal costs. You have transportation, you have books. Those are indeed real.
Right.
But if there's a way you can focus on managing those costs, the actual tuition and fees we charge is very modest up against our net price.
Comparing, especially remember when I was comparing and contrasting different places, it's definitely, tuition-wise at least, it's a lot, it's cheaper than some other places.
Yeah, a lot of value here. You know, we're also a place where, the only place in Missouri where you can achieve free tuition and general fees one of three ways. So that's important, not only on merit, but also need.
Right.
And then for our employees who've been here 5 years, their dependents, as well as themselves, can go tuition and general fee free after 5 years of employment.
Okay.
Up until that, it's 50% for dependents.
Still pretty good, though.
Yeah, it's very good. Well, it's an investment in people and potential.
Right.
And we want to make sure that the opportunities here are not closed off to the folks who are in our community.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so I kind of want to focus on maybe some of your past work in general. So I read online that you were a criminal. I believe it was it was political science. That's what it was.
Yes,
you were a political science teacher for a while. What kind of got you into that?
Well, early when I was a student, I had professors that really cared about us, and they inspired me to look at graduate school and think, you know, could I maybe be a college professor?
Okay.
And the person that did that for me was a political scientist. And so I began focusing on that because at the time I really enjoyed case law and the evolution of civil rights and liberties over time and the kinds of cases the Supreme Court decided. And ultimately went into graduate school for that. I also had a master's degree in criminal justice. You'd mentioned that.
That's what I was thinking.
And so I kept that area as a policy and administration focus for me at the doctoral level. But for me, I grew up in an area where politics was pretty fascinating and very meaningful for how to get things done. And I saw the real connection to people and the outcomes that made in their own lives. Also listened to a lot of stories about what policy meant for both individuals as well as business. And so the combination of all that, it was just really natural for me to become a political scientist, which tries to systematically understand not only political behavior, but the behavior of individuals within institutions and then the institutional behavior that produces policy and decisions, for example, in our courts or bureaucracy.
So it's kind of about, not necessarily about the politics, more so understanding people as a whole, sounds like.
It is a social behavioral science where we're attempting, ultimately, the goal for us is to be able to predict behavior. And if we can do that, then we have a better understanding of our politics as well as we're able to better design our institutions to work for us in a collective sense, which is why we engage in creating a government to secure more rights and liberties for ourselves collectively than we could individually. And how that works has always been very fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's also, it's pretty interesting to me looking at the progression of specifically civil rights was also something that's greatly interested me, especially over the past few years, just in general, because it's an important thing to look at for civil liberties and understanding what exactly you have at your disposal, essentially. So I think that's very important.
No, we're always having debates
about
what our rights and liberties are. And it's not only a discussion, there's real work that goes into defining those, and so that engagement's important. I would encourage you to stay involved.
No, I plan on
it. And to keep paying attention and to make sure your voice is heard, because we haven't written all of our chapters yet toward that more perfect union.
Right.
Or, you know, as Martin Luther King Jr. suggested, you know, the arc of our history bends more toward justice, and we're still bending and we're still going.
Absolutely.
So we can't stop.
No, can't stop now. We got to keep going with that.
Right.
I definitely agree with that sentiment in that way.
Very good.
And then I believe for other works or other places you've worked at, you were a dean at which university again? I apologize.
So
that's
okay. I have held.
Let's go discuss all of them. How about
you want to?
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Yeah. So I've not skipped any of the traditional leadership roles. I was a graduate coordinator for 5 years, three at one point and then two together, so a total of five. 5 years as a chairperson, a founding chair, and then 5 years as dean. Now, specifically, I was dean of liberal arts at Northeastern State University in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, which is also in the MIAA, so an athletic conference peer institution.
Right.
And then I left to be Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs at Arkansas Tech University, and after getting there, quickly moved into Interim Vice President for Academic Affairs and held that role almost 2 years before coming here in the summer of 2019 as the Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs. So a very, we'll call it a standard path, but certainly not one where, you know, any steps have been skipped.
Right, I'm sure. And, it definitely sounds like it's very, there's very clear progression.
It's been very linear. Now, it doesn't work that way for everyone.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And
I'm sure
some folks jump right into being dean, for example. For me, that was not the path that I had in mind when I began accepting leadership roles. And very grateful for all of those experiences because I rely on all of them just about daily. In doing the work that I do. And for me, I couldn't imagine not having those experiences. So there is something to be said for kind of the the slow but steady progression where you're learning. You're continually learning.
Right, yeah.
Leading through your values and trying to do good by others.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's kind of lost in general talk among general people, is that it feels like after a certain point in your life, you just stop learning. And I don't know why that necessarily is. I feel like that might be a product of more modern sensibilities, but it feels like after a certain point in a lot of people's lives, they just stop learning. They just stop learning new things. And
yeah, I think it depends on the person.
Obviously, yeah.
And if you read certain scholars, there's a connection between your view of lifelong learning and your attitudinal approach. So if you believe, for example, that life gets richer as you get older, you're more likely to invest in lifelong learning.
Right.
And you see people very committed to that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if your approach is a little bit different, you may think there is a point in time where, there is no such thing as an old dog learning new tricks, so to speak, and that your learning is done. Being on a college campus and believing in the power of education, I think we can learn something new every day.
Right.
And a neat thing to ask yourself is, in the last few days, what have I learned? And hopefully you'll be able to answer that question. But no, learning over the lifetime is important.
No, I definitely agree. It's just I was merely bringing up that it feels like it's a more uncommon thing to see discussed. How about maybe not. I'm just not seeing it as much. People just learning new things as much. It feels like people are getting more and more, especially with social media and stuff, people are getting more and more entrenched in their own specific viewpoint without learning what the other viewpoint is, or what other people are really saying.
Oh, it's very fascinating, and you're right. The social media proliferation, what we call the choose your truth era, where you don't really have to be exposed to different ideas or different experiences. Right. Very real. I grew up in a very rural place, very little technology, not a lot going on. And so really all you had was books and your imagination and knowing something else was out there, and you just had to go find it and discover it. And so for me, that was the values my parents brought me up with, is to be willing to go anywhere and to learn anything and to not be so sure that I couldn't be persuaded that my view was different. Obviously, you want to believe what you believe and hold your values dearly.
Right.
But also do your best to understand others.
Right. And consider what they're actually trying to say instead of what your already preconceived notions of what they're saying it kind of are.
Yeah, and to recognize our common humanity.
Right, yeah.
Even someone believes something differently or practices something differently, it doesn't make them less of a person.
No, yeah, it's just they're usually just they have a different thought process behind whatever it might be that you're discussing.
Yeah, and if we're honest with ourselves, we want that difference. Otherwise, it'd be pretty boring. And then, in my own job as a political scientist, behavioral scientist, I wouldn't have anything to explain or understand because we'd all be the same.
We all just think the same way, so
Wouldn't need me.
Wouldn't really be a position, yeah.
Right.
Stay tuned for more after this break. Voices of UCM is sponsored by Rise Community Services.
Every minute, there are 6 children born in the U.S., and one of them will be born with a developmental disability. Rise Community Services believes that an individual's potential doesn't vanish simply because they were born with a unique set of challenges. We believe that each person deserves a life full of hope and empowered by self-choice. If you or a loved one need help, please visit watchusrise.org.
Hi, I'm Layla Ali. I might be undefeated in professional boxing, but there's one problem I can't fight alone: childhood hunger. 17 million kids in America struggle with it. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
To help solve hunger in your community and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with UCM Provost Dr. Bridgman. We finish our talk by discussing how he ended up at UCM, his interest in radio, and his plans for the future of UCM.
So what kind of drew you to, kind of going back to like your general work, what kind of drew you to UCM out of a bunch of other places, I imagine?
It's just a wonderful institution.
Yeah.
I don't know if we appreciate how well UCM is thought of in higher education. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful university that other people regard very highly. Mm-hmm. And so for me, being able to come to a place like UCM was really a no decision.
Okay.
I knew, I was very familiar with the programs, the mm-hmm. faculty, the staff, the excellence throughout the institution. Mm-hmm. In my role, the relationship to the president is extremely important. Mm-hmm. Some folks believe that the success in the role as provost is going to be determined by the president. And we have an excellent president. You know, President Best is a wonderful colleague, a friend to everyone, mm-hmm, and has been just a joy to work with as a colleague. And mm-hmm. that's what everyone was saying, you know, as I was considering coming. Mm-hmm. And that's turned out to be very true.
Yeah. I had my last interview was with Dr. Best.
Oh, cool.
He was a great dude to talk to. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, he's a better interviewer than I am, so you may want to have him back if this doesn't go well.
No, this one's fine. Yeah. This is going fantastic.
Cool. I'm having a great time. I've strongly considered going into radio coming out of high school.
Oh, yeah?
Really was interested more in journalism as well as radio. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't cut out for television, but I've always been fascinated with radio, and I think it's just a wonderful medium.
Yeah, I think radio is definitely, especially going into like the modern era, it's definitely not talked about nearly as much. But in a way, radio is kind of transitioning into streaming at this point in time, because
right.
you're seeing resurgences of like radio dramas, but they're just podcasts now instead of
right.
specifically radio dramas, and I think that's a really cool evolution of the genre that we're kind of coming back to, because like as television was born, radio dramas just kind of died off, and it was just music on the radio
right.
for the most part. But with the introduction of like podcasts, basically anyone off the street can make really interesting stuff for people to listen to.
It's great content, and mm-hmm. I'm fascinated with some of the podcasts and success folks
yeah.
have had doing those. Mm-hmm. I can recall, you know, my own growing up in the middle dark ages. Now every game is on television.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't the case, you know, when I was a youngster.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was radio, mm-hmm. which is how you, you know, consume your sports events.
Mm-hmm.
More times than not, and you hoped you could get reception.
Right, especially in, like you said, you were in a rural area.
Yes,
so.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely interesting to see how radio has kind of evolved over time into this new kind of format. And,
really,
and radio is still very much alive and well as well.
Well, it is. And, you know, when I was dean, we had Jimmy Webb, you know, the famous songwriter
right.
on campus. And he worked closely with Glenn Campbell on all those hit
cool.
songs. But how he got his start was back when radio was truly coast to coast. You know, the broadcast was
right.
national.
It was the thing to be tuned into.
And that's kind of how he got started in one of his first hits was due to the power of radio.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's definitely very. That's a very cool story. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's really neat that we.
And now we have satellites.
Yeah.
How mm-hmm. about that? And so it's global.
Mm-hmm. It's not just limited to like a 5 mile radius. You can listen to an American radio station all the way on the other side of the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. Technology is a wonderful thing.
No. Yeah. For sure. Definitely. See, that kind of transitions into, actually, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Never mind.
All right.
So what kind of plans do you have for the future of being the provost? What, just like, probably, I imagine, continuing the work that you're doing, but anything particular?
Yeah, back to the topic of technology. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to think about how that fits the university long term in our teaching and learning. So mm-hmm. we're evolving there. Our Office of Digital Learning and Instructional Innovations, working significantly these days in augmented reality and extended reality, virtual reality. So our learning science is telling us that technology-enhanced teaching matters for our students.
Right.
And being able to not only help you learn, but retain the content and the problem-solving and the approaches that we need you to know to be successful in your discipline. The other flip side of that is we're always working on making our programs accessible. Students can, of course, come here.
Right.
But what about students that can't come here? Developing our programs to be in an access mode for students who maybe need them online, but also thinking about the professional connections of all of our disciplines externally and the learning needs of those professional organizations. And serving them. So maybe taking our expertise off campus, but in person. Maybe not even in a full degree. So that's what we're working on long term, is is the effects of technology, not only in teaching, but also access, but also kind of the changing interests of students, particularly on managing the costs. Maybe staying at home, taking fewer than a full-time load number of hours. And what does that mean? And making sure that we're supporting students in the way they want to come to the university and be part of us, but also helping you get the credentials you want, whether it's just a course or a certificate all the way through a graduate degree. In the short run, this year is a 10-year accreditation visit from the Higher Learning Commission.
So I've seen signs around, so that, I imagine that's a big focus right now.
That's huge for us. We just had a mock visit, and our actual visit will be mid-March, which is when it'll happen for real. We're in really good shape, but that's a entire campus effort. And so that's a big one. More immediate, the joy of commencement that'll happen here in the first full weekend of December. That's an exciting time. And then we'll turn right back around and get ready for the spring semester. So it's both short term and long term. And then commingled in that is making sure that our faculty and staff have what they need on a daily basis in order to get their work done. And so that's always something we're working on. To get a little better at that, too.
That's definitely an important thing, considering the health of, or I guess the health and status of both your faculty and your student population. Definitely an important thing to consider.
Absolutely. And so whenever we have issues of folks not being able to have what they need, is seeing how we can get it.
Got to get that figured out.
Yeah, get it figured out. Solve problems for others.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
So we were talking about your interest in radio earlier.
What
are some other things that you're interested outside of being the provost, I guess?
Well, I have a family. My wife and I have been married, I'll go ahead and round up, almost 25 years. We have three boys, an elementary fourth grader, middle school eighth grader, and then high school junior. And so
a lot of variety there.
Very, very committed to them and what they're doing. But I like antique shops, stores. Love to travel. I love plays, movies, books. The ideas others have, the experiences others have had. So every now and then I try to get out on the golf course. I'm terrible at it. I have a provost golf game. Which means I'm terrible because there's just not a lot of time for it. But I just love spending time with friends and family and traveling around and seeing how things are going. Continuing that lifelong learning.
It's definitely important.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a good way to kind of end off the show. I really appreciate you coming on, Dr. Bridgman.
Well, it's been a real joy. I appreciate the invite.
I'm glad that you had a good time. That's what I want to promote at the end of the day. Just coming on, just talking, having a good time. Kind of the idea.
Well, I wish you a good end of the semester and all students. you know, my advice is now's not the time to slow down and take it one day at a time.
That's how I'm having to take it.
My mantra is do what's next.
Mm-hmm.
And because I have found, as you can imagine, we tend to want to worry about things 2 days from now when there's something tomorrow.
Right, yeah.
Well, let's get tomorrow done first
and not today.
What's next.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks again.
Yeah, for sure.
This has been Voices of UCM, sponsored by RISE Community Services. Be sure to tune in next semester every Wednesday and Saturday at 7 p.m. You can listen to the show at ucmbeat.com on either the live feed or at any time by going to the Shows tab and finding the Voices of UCM tab. Once again, I'm your host, Andrew Zellner, and we'll talk next time on Voices of UCM.
Did you know that the University of Central Missouri has been leading innovation for nearly 150 years? With more accreditations and more qualified faculty members, our commitment to academic success is unparalleled. And we make sure every student receives the support they need to graduate on time and with less debt. So whatever opportunity you're looking for, make your impact sooner at UCM, with campuses located in Warrensburg, Lee's Summit, and online. Find out more about UCM and the power of opportunity in action at ucmo.edu.